Blog Talk Radio.
Standing Firm podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners. You can donate on our website at covenantcommission.org or by writing to us at Reformed Church of the Holy Trinity, P.O. Box 1125, Mooresville, Indiana, 46158. Welcome to the Standing Firm podcast, a ministry of Covenant Commission brought to you by Reformed Church of the Holy Trinity in Morgan County, Indiana. In an age of apostasy, Standing Firm is dedicated to contending for the Christian worldview according to the doctrines and practices of the Reformed faith. Join us as we stand as good soldiers of Jesus Christ to defend Western Christendom by assaulting the gates of hell until the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of Christ. Well, good afternoon, and thank you for listening to Standing Firm. We appreciate your support and taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to this special episode of Standing Firm. And the reason why it is special is we are not broadcasting on our normal time. And the reason being is because we are 1 week away from the 2016 elections. And beginning last year in the primaries, the 2016 presidential election has become one of the most divisive since maybe 1860. There are similar characteristics to that of the Civil War era, where brother is divided against brother. And it is no small wonder, since America is divided more than ever due to the many different and opposing worldviews in play. Two decades ago, Patrick Buchanan began warning about the Balkanization of America, and we have now reached that point, and as a result, this election has polarized the American church, and this polarizing effect is even being felt within Reformed circles. So what is the Christian who is committed to a biblical worldview concerning government to do in this hotly contended election? Today we have with us Gary DeMar, who is an author, lecturer, and former president of American Vision, and has spent the last 40 years writing and speaking on topics like politics, economics, ethics, and education from a biblical worldview. Gary is the author of over 30 books, which include America's Christian History, God and Government, Crooked World, and Last Days Madness. He has been interviewed by Time Magazine, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, the BBC, and Sean Hannity, including many other numerous radio, television, and newspaper interviews across the country. It is our privilege and honor to have Gary DeMar with us here today to speak about this very important and vital election in our history. Gary, welcome to Standing Firm, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule, and welcome to Standing Firm. We will jump right into the topic because I know that you are taking a lot of heat from some of our Reformed brethren and many others for your opinions about this election. And, many times some very nasty things being said in relation to these things, people that we would consider our friends, at least at one time. But what is it about this election that many of our brethren are not seeing, not only in its importance for the next 4 years, but also in the decades to come?
Well, that's kind of a loaded question. We're at a point in time where the choices we have are not that great. We have someone like Donald Trump who has his problems, and we have Hillary Clinton. We know her long, long history, and these are really the only two viable options. And by viable, I mean one of the two is going to win. There are other third-party options and so forth, but they don't have a chance to win. And so, there are lots of my friends who think, well, the only thing that they can do is to vote for one of these third-party candidates. And because they can't bring themselves to vote for Donald Trump, and they don't want Hillary Clinton. But we're going to get one or the other. And so there has to be an evaluation of policy. We know what the policy of the Clintons is. They've been around for a very, very long time. We know what they're going to do. Hillary Clinton has told us what she's going to do. She's going to raise more tax money. She's going to spend more money. She's going to open up borders. You can go down the list. She's going to support Planned Parenthood with government money. This is will overturn the Hyde Amendment, which has always kept any taxpayer money out of any support for abortion. There's a whole list of things we know Hillary Clinton is going to do because she has supported them all. Well, I shouldn't say all of her life, because she's changed her views on homosexual marriage. There was a time in her life when she was anti-abortion, which is typical of a lot of liberals. When they see the winds change and they want to get in political office, that's what they do. They change in terms of where the culture is going. Same thing happened with Jesse Jackson, who called abortion black genocide. And then there's Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a political novice. He got fed up with the way things are. His platform is actually pretty good. It's probably 80% of it I could accept. I'd like to get in there and change a few things. Mike Pence is a very, very good guy. He's articulating Trump's positions very, very well. And I suspect if I pulled all those out and listed them on my Facebook page or on an article on Constitution.com that I write for, that a lot of my friends would say, yeah, 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 we go along with all these. We support all of these. Those are the two choices. Mm-hmm. You're going to get one or the other. I'm voting to keep the greater evil out of the White House. Am I satisfied mm-hmm. with Donald Trump as a candidate? No. But he is the only candidate that can beat Hillary Clinton, because he's the only viable candidate in this race. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Yes, sir, and I absolutely 100% agree. My primary choice was Ted Cruz, as many others were.
Look, this is the thing. We went through the primary process. It's an imperfect system, mm-hmm. and I think for the next 4 years, the Republicans need to fix it. But we mm-hmm. went through the primary process, and all of my critics, you know, they voted for someone else in the primary. I voted for Ted Cruz in the primary. I could have taken mm-hmm. Rubio in the primary. I picked Cruz. He didn't win. Mm-hmm. The other candidates didn't win. I'm not going to whine and take my ball and go home. I want to win, and that winning means defeating Hillary Clinton, the Democrat Party, as we're beginning to see the shenanigans going on in the Department of Justice and the media. She brings all of that to the White House. Donald Trump doesn't bring any of that to the White House. He'll have opposition from the Democrats, and he'll have opposition from the GOP. If he proposes anything that's way out of kilter, it's not going to get through. Hillary Clinton gets elected because she'll have all the Democrats in her corner, plus she'll have a number of squishy Republicans in her corner. She'll get a lot of her legislation passed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe we're all, you know, desiring to make right political decisions in the midst of all the hotly contested arguments and so forth. And it is essential that we have the proper biblical foundations to guide our worldview. Now, many Christians seem to want some kind of a perfect checklist. And, you know, at this stage, we have a choice of one or the other, and I would rather hope for Constantine than knowingly put Nero in power. But most of life is being able to make righteous discernment in the midst of a world ruined by sin, without becoming the advocates of sin. So what are the political foundations that should be guiding us in this specific election cycle?
Well, I mean, they're obviously very clear. You know, look at Exodus 18. There are a number of places throughout the Bible the type of person we should elect. We've got 1 Timothy chapter 3 about qualifications for church officers, which fit very, very well with Exodus 18. But you got to remember a couple of things. First thing is, Exodus 18, it operates within a covenantal nation. The entire nation assented, well, will assent by when you get to Exodus chapter 20, they assent to do the will of God. They had an objective standard by which to guide them, although there was really no voting that took place in Israel. And the same thing in 1 Timothy chapter 3, qualifications within the church. The church has a church covenant. It's an ecclesiastical government. We don't have that in the United States today. We have a very mixed system. If all the Christians have voted for the best candidate out there, we probably wouldn't win because there aren't enough of us to do so. We have to. We live within the terms of the system that our government is today. And right now, we don't have those options. We don't assent to in our nation abide by the biblical law or in the New Testament by a church covenant. We're in a political system, and this is unfortunate, where the Constitution begins, we the people. That is the standard today, and that's a very bad standard, but that's where we are. And we've got to make the best of what we can politically based upon what is there, what we have to work with. And that's what we've got to work with right now. It's these two candidates, which is the best option. I mean, Trump has promised to help with the persecution of the church. He's actually proposed to get rid of the 1954 standard overruling 501c3 organizations, which includes churches. They can't really politic. He's saying things that if any other candidate would propose, most of my friends in fact would support.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings up a question. Why do you suppose there is such a backlash in the midst of these things? I mean, because we see the rise of anger all throughout the United States. I mean, people are getting fed up all over the place. And but amongst a lot of the people that are our friends and who are pledging to not vote for Trump, and, you know, they're the never Trumpers. What do you think is driving them to where they would be willing to allow a Hillary Clinton to come to power, whom we already know what she will do? I mean, she hates us, and she will do everything she can to destroy what we believe and stand for, whereas Trump is at least being friendly towards us. So what is it that do you believe that is behind the scene driving this never Trump idea?
You know, I really don't know. I mean, I hear what they're saying. They can't, you know, they have to vote righteously, can't give up their principles and so forth and so on. And I understand all that. But what I don't understand is giving up all your principles and essentially opening the door for someone like Hillary Clinton. I don't know what that accomplishes. And some will say, well, we deserve the judgment of God. Well, we do deserve the judgment of God. But it doesn't mean we have to vote for the judgment of God. We really don't know God's will in all of this. I mean, God may have, you know, picked Trump, you know, to, you know, he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, he picks the foolish things of the world. Maybe he's picking a foolish person to wake us up as to what's really happening. And I think what's happened here very, very clearly, you know, for the longest time, Christians worked to get people elected, to, you know, to get things accomplished, and they did that through the GOP. They couldn't do it through the Democrat Party. That wasn't going to happen. So every off presidential year, they elected these guys after, and then they were told, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, and they never did it. The GOP just buckled under to what was going on with the Obama administration. And I just think a lot of people, they're not voting for Trump and dismissing his sins. They're voting for Trump because they're sick and tired and fed up with a GOP who was given both the Senate and the House of Representatives, and they've done almost nothing. And I just think they just said, enough of this. We're going with Trump because he's promised to shake things up, and he went after both parties, and plus he's going after the media, which is something, again, the GOP almost never does, never did.
One of the things that I'm noticing with a lot of my friends is that there's this growing tend towards political perfectionism, which I guess is what we would expect coming from political Arminianism or its counterpart, political hyper-Calvinism. Growing up, I used to hear pastors repeat the phrase that many Christians have become so heavenly minded that they're no earthly good. Do you believe that there's a proper and biblical place for strategic voting and or a biblical strategy of incrementalism?
I do. And we have to remember that Christians really didn't get involved in the political process until the late 70s. Remember when Jimmy Carter, I don't know how old you are or what your listeners are, but in the 1970s, 1976, Jimmy Carter ran as a born-again Christian. And the media, the secularists in the media, had to figure out what in the world born again meant. Billy Graham finally wrote a book called Born Again. And so Jerry Falwell, after the very disappointment with Jimmy Carter, he turned out to be a very liberal Christian, pro-homosexual rights, not so much pro-abortion, but supportive of abortion, wanted to actually try to close down private schools over racial issues and so forth, which were mythological. And so he starts the Moral Majority. And so for 10 years, Christians got involved in politics, two landslide elections with Ronald Reagan. And then the incrementalism took place by, Reagan raised taxes. He continued to spend money. Of course, George H.W. Bush gets in there, and he was an establishment Republican. And so there was this drip, 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 drip of giving things away, colluding with the Democrats. And it was hard to get Christians to stay energized and to stay fixed on a goal. And because they didn't win it all in two elections, a lot of them said, I'm not getting involved in politics anymore. It's time for me to get back to just preaching the gospel and so forth. And I think this is one of the reasons we're in the mess we're in today. And it didn't help that people were predicting that we're living in the end times and all of this is trivialities and so forth. We shouldn't be involved in this because Jesus is coming back soon.
Another one of the things I keep hearing over and over again is concerning voting for the lesser of two evils. And the saying goes, even though it's been taken out of context and some things applied to it that Charles Spurgeon didn't actually even say, it goes that if faced with two evils, choose neither, and so forth, and different variations of that. Do you believe that this is really a straw man that's being presented to our people that is duping them into, making the, proper choices at this stage? Is this whole idea of the lesser evils things really a straw man?
Well, I always tell people who keep bringing that up, I said, you couldn't vote for anybody if you follow that because everybody has some evil in them. In fact, one fellow on my Facebook post, I said, who of the 535 representatives and senators could you vote for? And he says, I couldn't vote for any of them. And I said, okay, so how do you engage politically if you couldn't vote for a single person in Congress? Everybody is evil. And one guy wrote back and he said, oh, come on, Gary, you know that what we're talking about here. And then I said, look, I understand exactly what you're talking about, that there are certain lines you just can't cross. So quit using the phrase I can't vote for the lesser of two evils, because everybody has some evil in them. And of course, what we want to say is we want to vote for the best possible candidate, given what we know that what that candidate is all about. And right now, the worst of all of the evils is Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump with Mike Pence is a way to stop what I believe is literally the Clinton crime family, as we're beginning to see more and more that's coming out. And if she does get elected, I want you to think what's going to happen in the next 4 years. There's just going to be a steady drip, drip, drip of accusations and so forth. The media is going to protect her. The Department of Justice is going to protect her. And the Democrat Party is going to protect her. And who knows what we're going to get. It won't be the end of the world. But I'm going to tell you, it's going to be a whole lot harder to dig ourselves out after 4 years of Hillary Clinton than it was after 8 years of President Obama.
Yes, it absolutely will be. The reason why I'm asking these questions in this fashion is because to be this misunderstanding among some concerning Reconstructionism or any version of restoring society, for those that don't like that term, but any version of restoring society to a biblical worldview and practice, there seems to be a lot of confusion. one gentleman told me that we should desire to see the demolition of the current system rather than reforming it. And I don't actually believe he understands what he's actually asking for. And when he was asked on how we were to do this, his response was, God has it. You know, God's got it under control.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Isn't that just another form of political atheism and retreat like we have already experienced in much of evangelical dispensationalism over the last 100 years plus?
Yeah, I mean, look, I understand this system is corrupt from top to bottom. There is no doubt about that. And that's both political
mm-hmm.
parties. One of the things that we've got to recognize is you can't every 4 years all of a sudden, you know, say, oh, I'm going to vote for this guy. I'm going to vote for this guy, this third party guy that no one's ever heard of before. I mean, you go online and you look at him and say, well, who is this guy? If you have to say, who is this guy? This person has no business running for election for the president of the United States. I mean, if a guy hasn't even won a state congressional seat or a state state senator, hasn't been in Congress, hasn't done something. I mean, Ronald Reagan won, you know, he was governor for two terms. George W. Bush was governor for two terms. You can't mm-hmm. just say, I'm going to vote for president, vote for me because I got all the right stuff. I would say,
mm-hmm.
look, vote for me. I've got all the right stuff too, but I don't have any business running for any political office until at least I you know, test the waters at the local level. So that's the first thing I would say. The second thing is to say, civil government isn't just the presidency, and it's not just the House, the Senate, and the Supreme Court. There are state
mm-hmm.
governments. There are governors and state constitutions. There are county governors. There are state reps and senators. Everything has to change. Gary North has a phrase: you can't change just one thing. How many
mm-hmm.
parents who are never Trumpers are sending their kids to government schools, which
mm-hmm.
is, you know, diametrically opposed to everything that they believe? And I know there, by the way, there are a lot of people, you know, friends of mine and people who are, you know, criticizing me who don't send their kids to public schools. So I'm not saying every never Trumper out there is, you know, is sending their kids to public schools. But there are certainly
right.
a lot of never Trumpers out there who are sending their kids to a government school system that teaches everything diametrically opposed to our system today. You can't change just one thing. We got to change everything, and that's a lot of work. And look,
mm-hmm.
let's be fair here. Liberals, Democrats, establishment Republicans have done the work. They've done the hard work in order to get in the positions they've been in. There are a lot of Christians out there who just, you know, who say, well, I remember some woman saying to me that, well, Gary, you don't believe in miracles. I believe in miracles, but I don't believe God uses miracles most of the time. He oftentimes
mm-hmm.
doesn't do miracles. And so she has a miracle candidate that she's going to vote for, and she's going to think, well, God could make this guy president. Yeah, he could, but that's not the way things work.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of hard work and money, experience, know-how, and unfortunately, many Christians aren't willing to do that. Pastors aren't preaching from the pulpit what the Bible says about these issues. They won't touch politics with a 10-foot pole.
Mm-hmm.
They won't touch the issues like abortion or homosexuality and all kinds of things. And I mean, I go to a very conservative Bible believing church, and my pastor knows all these issues, but I have to say he really doesn't deal with it, much of it, from the pulpit at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's no doubt that, we are largely to blame for this, political nightmare, as you wrote on, constitution.com. And it reminds me of, you know, When you stand up and preach against the homosexuals in San Francisco or the one worlders in New York, everyone pats you on the back and tells you how wonderful it is. But when you turn around and say that the reason for our captivity is our own sin, and because we've been asleep at the wheel and because we have abdicated our responsibilities, then all of a sudden, you know, no one wants to touch you with a 10-foot pole.
Another thing to keep in mind that Christians out there are part of the political system. if I were to sit down and give a list of all of the things that would change if we really got in a solid biblical worldview type candidate, I would say 75 to 80% of Christians wouldn't vote for him because they like the freebies. They like the government to help them with education. They like the government to pay for their low mortgage rates. They like the Fed dropping rates and all this sort of thing. And you know, that's part of the problem too. A lot of these a lot of these Christians out there, they're part of the problem because they accept a maybe not as big a government or a controlling government, but big enough and controlling enough that they would oppose what we advocate.
Yes, sir. Well, our time is moving rather quickly. Part of the problem is we have abdicated our responsibilities. So rather than waiting until the next election and rolling the dice to see what we get, what can we do over the next 4 years to aid in this call for, you know, national reformation and to work to actually make positive advancements in reforming our society? What are some things that the average Christian can do?
Well, I think the average Christian should pray and ask for wisdom. Said, God, show me what needs to be done. I mean, if I have to change every single thing I believe about government and politics and so forth, so be it. Next thing, we need to repent of our indifference to what's going on. I mean, I wrote a book called Myths, Lies, and Half-Truths, you know, explaining this kinds of excuses, you know, politics is dirty. Jesus didn't get mixed up in politics. Our citizenship is in heaven. There's a separation between church and state. And Christians believe those types of things that are actually in the Bible. They need to take a closer look at this and educate themselves on what the Bible says about these issues. And again, the name of the book is Myths, Lies, and Half-Truths. I also wrote a book called God and Government, which lays out from self-government all the way up through civil government, education, welfare, the whole bit, lays it all out. And I wrote this back in the 1980s. And if Christians had followed those principles from the 1980s, we would be in a much, much better position than we are today, but we're not. Pastors need to get educated as well and start teaching these things from the pulpit. Will you lose parishioners as a result? You probably will. But there is a, you know, count the cost. I mean, this is not a popularity contest. We're dealing with the issue of righteousness. And if this took us a long time to get in this position, it's going to take us a long time to get out of this position. We're not going to do it overnight, but voting for Donald Trump gives us a little bit of breathing room, but we've got to take advantage of that breathing room. And that means putting people in at the local government, governors who will say no to the federal government, electing people to Congress who will say no to Supreme Court nominees who don't abide by the Constitution and a biblical ethic. These guys give in too easily. They like the power trip and the money that comes their way. A lot has to change, and it's not going to come by one election by any means.
Yes, sir. Well, I highly recommend our listeners getting a hold of your books and reading them. Where can they find your books and to be able to order them?
They can go to AmericanVision.org, AmericanVision.org, and you can search for God and Government. It's used in homeschools. It's a great, great book. It lays out all the basic principles. Myths, Lies, and Half-Truths is also available at AmericanVision.org. All my other books are there. Plus, Joel McDermott has a very, very good book dealing with local politics on how you can change things by going back to the local and county level. So look for anything that Joel McDermott has written as well.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. On a personal note, do you have any plans to write any new books in the future?
Oh, I'm working on a couple right now, most of them in the area of eschatology and ethics and so forth. But I don't know what else I can write on politics. I've written a ton of it already. It's all out there. There's really nothing that's new that needs to be written. It's all been done. Christians just need to grasp it and educate themselves on it.
Amen. Well, we encourage everyone to go to constitution.com. They can read some of your writings on current events. And we thank you very much for being here with us. And we appreciate your ministry over the years. And we look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. God bless you. Thanks. Well, this has been Standing Firm, speaking in relation to the 2016 election. We hope that it's been a benefit to you, and we hope that you will get involved to work in order to bring our society back to Christ by standing for the truth. And until next time, God bless and may God save America. You have been listening to the Standing Firm podcast. Standing Firm is a ministry of Covenant Commission brought to you by Reformed Church of the Holy Trinity by the authority of Christ to go into the whole world and preach the gospel. For more information, visit Covenant Commission online at covenantcommission.org or Reformed Church of the Holy Trinity at reformedholytrinity.org. You can also write us at Reformed Church of the Holy Trinity, Post Office Box 1125, Mooresville, Indiana, 46158. Again, that is Reformed Church of the Holy Trinity, P.O. Box 1125, Mooresville, Indiana, 46158.